mirrorless.
You ever just put tape on the ground where they should go? And then you don't have to do all that?
No, no, Sam. No, no, no. We're not that smart, clever, or consistent.
What would that be? Yeah. Yeah.
You're coming on a beer podcast, and you're like,
production value.
Thought about this? Like, fuck no, we haven't thought about this.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Kentucky Commons Radio Hour. I'm Michael Moeller, joined by David Satterley, John Ronayne at Brewgrass Homebrew Supply here in Louisville, Kentucky. We have a special guest that we'll intro in just a moment. But first, I wanted to give us a shout out to our YouTube channel that we launched recently. If you want to see the content that we're filming, you can do that at YouTube. YouTube.com/@Louisville Ale Trail. I believe that's how YouTube does those URLs. So please subscribe, you know, like, comment, share. And that goes doubly so for the Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to the podcast without video. Just be sure that you're subscribing and liking and sharing, because that helps us in ways that you don't even know. Like, you can't even fathom. We are building worlds within worlds over here. And so we got a little hot there. I'm sorry. But joined this evening by one Sam Cruz, co-founder, the lead visionary at Against the Grain Brewery here.
The visionary.
Just the Vision from Marvel. He's the Vision.
Can see everything.
Yes. Sam Cruz, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you can tell.
Yeah.
Are we going to start with whatever the hell this weird thing we're drinking is? Do we want to crack that?
Yes. Thank you, John. We're starting to show off with a beer that I brought tonight. I don't have much of a cellar, not as vast and fun as David Satterley's cellar, but I have a couple of what I would call dusties, even though this guy is 5 years old. This is a 2017 Schneider Weiss.
It's a Flagoon. Looks like a Flagoon.
It is an Eisbach Barrique. From the TapEx series, I guess. It's just their base Eisbach from Schneider Weiss, matured in American Oak Pinot Noir barrels for 21 months.
Holy cow.
It's almost 2 years in a barrel. You know something about that.
It's 2 years in a barrel?
Yeah.
Sure. It's an incredibly small bottle.
Yeah. David, why don't you read that description for
us? Well, it's quite a handsome bottle, too. Let's see.
In 2010, Hans-Peter Drexler and Jérôme de Rebetez from Brasserie de Franche Montagne in Switzerland started the project, maturing some of their famous Aventinus Eisbach in red wine barrels for 2 years. Enjoy this combination of the complex Eisbach aromas and the woody character from the wine barrel. This is a wheat Eisbach. It's 12% alcohol. If you're familiar with the Schneider Weiss Aventinus brand,
good shit.
These are called go to sleep beers. Mm-hmm. If you go to Knock Bar and you have two of them, well, you will go to sleep. But also,
been there.
Eisbach as a whole is
Before you drink it, can we rate it before you drink it? Like a guess rating.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm gonna give it a four.
Four.
A four.
Yeah. Do you have a rationale behind that number? Like you think, oh, it's going to be 5 years, probably not very good anymore. Or
I like to go to sleep beer a lot. Like I'm a big fan. Been to sleep many times.
Aventinus.
Yeah. I think they've probably fucked this up with the wine barrel for 2 years.
How do you like Berliner Weiss?
It's fuck. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it?
I'm giving it
a little oxidized there, maybe. Or?
No.
What if I named it Consecration and I said it was from this fancy ass brewery on the West Coast? And you could only get so much of it.
Oh, it's pouring in a really muddy looking color. No carb.
I don't buy that. That's why I don't buy that shit.
I think I bought this.
Consecrator? Is that the one with the little goat on it?
It's the Russian River consecration out of there.
Just because of beer.
Concentration. Yes.
Yeah. Concentration.
If they concentrated a little bit more, they would remember to pull this out earlier.
I have a really bad joke that I want to make, but I will not.
Can I cheers somebody?
Yeah, I will cheers you, sir. Thank you for coming on, cheers. Sam. And this is going to be a great conversation about like old ass beer people.
I love old ass beer people.
Me too.
David, what do you think it's going to be?
I for one am a fan of the Eisbach style. If you're unfamiliar, this is kind of how you would make a extremely concentrated beer. Would you say concentrator? Where you actually kind of freeze distill the beer, get all the alcohol out, and then you're left with this product of pure malty goodness. Again, the red wine barrel is probably going to add like tannic sour notes to it. I'm going to go like 6.5, maybe 7. It might surprise me, but it's 12%. So,
I'll probably see. I was going to rate it higher, then I saw just how muddy and like sedimenty it poured and into my glass. But, I like Eisbach. Eisbach's pretty good. I don't know what red wine would do to it. I'm going to give it a 6.
Well, I haven't tasted it yet, but I smelled it and it smells oxidized and funkified as shit. So let's taste it real quick. It looks muddy as shit.
Nope, nobody's tasted
it. What's your number? So. What's your number before you taste it? Pre-rate
it. And then see if it adds up to the number.
I don't have any expectations for this.
Okay, so 5?
No,
five?
10. 10 out of 10.
Okay.
Is exactly what it's going to taste like.
That's what they wanted to hear.
All right.
Here we go. Ooh,
funk.
Okay, I take it all back. I love it.
Yeah, that's really good.
I love it.
Yeah, that's
10 out of 10.
That's incredibly...
It actually smells way... More,
I think it smells bad.
Beaten down than it is.
No, it's incredibly mild for 12%.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So my 4, is that what I said?
Yeah.
Way off.
Gets a little bump.
Yeah. I'll put mine back up to like, 6 to 7. I don't know what a 10 looks like. That's the thing. So it's better than what I thought it'd be.
Would I drink it again?
No,
absolutely.
I would.
No, I would.
Yeah,
I would drink it again.
In this format, yeah. I mean, this is like what, less than 375.
But the next time I drank it, I'd be like, "Oh, cool." I'd be like, it'll probably smell like a 4 out of 10. It'll probably taste like a 10 out of 10.
So this is 11.2 ounces. Yeah. So I think we have the perfect amount.
And yeah,
our little tasters right now.
There's some oxidation going on. There's some like weird bacterial stuff that's kind of on the back, but man, it holds up. I'm not complaining at all.
So we have this beer from 2017 that was 5 years ago, but even then, Against the Grain was 6 years old at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Founded in 2010. Speak a little bit about just those early years.
Early years of founding the brewery?
You could take it back even further. Do you remember when you had your first beer or the first time you drank beer that was like, I like this. Yeah.
Is there a story there?
Abso-fucking-lutely. I was 11 years old where I had a full beer. I've got a good friend. His name's Eric Allen. He's a fucking idiot. He lives down in Florida. I talk to him over text daily. I sometimes can't stand to hear his voice because we disagree on a lot, but I love the guy to death. Anyways, his parents drank quite a bit, like maybe an unhealthy amount, you could say.
I understand them.
They were enthusiasts.
Yeah, yes. They were very enthusiastic. Yeah. We would spend the night over there, and they had a lot of beers. And one day, we were like, we're gonna be fucking grown ups. We're getting beers and we're getting cigarettes. So he stole a couple of the long thin ones, Misties,
Virginia Slimes.
Virginia Slimes.
Slimes.
He stole a couple of those. And when his mom went to the bathroom, I grabbed two old Milwaukees.
Hell yeah.
We went out. It was probably about 4 p.m. We went out around the side of the house where there was one window and it wasn't near. Lit the cig up. I took my first drag and almost fucking died. Like, And I was like, this is terrible. And I just handed it to him and he's like,
enjoying
this is so
much.
Good. I cracked my beer and I took a drink and I swear to you, I don't think I've known a love like that. That was amazing, that moment. So I drank my beer. He took a drink. He's like, gross. And I said, give that to me.
Hell yeah.
And I got fucking wasted and we went in and Nintendo'd for the rest of the night. And that was the beginning. That was my first beer.
So if we wanted to fast forward it a bit, do you remember? That reflects my experiences very well. Was there a time in your later adult life where you're like, beer and alcohol, it's a good stress relief. It's a good way to hang out with friends. It's a good way to just kind of
fail out of college.
Yeah. Well, there we are.
Yeah.
Was there a point where you're like, I'm going to lean into this? This alcohol is going to become not only my like day job, but I might be, this could be a career for me.
Kind of, but not a career. No, yeah. It was a stress reliever. Prior to working in the brewery at Bluegrass, well, let me preface this. In college, I got a job and worked at Bloomington Brewing Company. So I spent a little bit of time cleaning kegs and cleaning the floor. And I didn't realize at the time, but I was cleaning out the mash tun pretty frequently. Yeah. I had no idea. It was just a tank.
There's all the shit in here.
Yeah. Yeah. I just always thought, this is so fucking gross. What are they doing here?
You give this to the fucking pigs and I have to scoop it out.
I did that, and it really kind of, I got attuned to the culture in the brewery. Like Floyd, the boss, the head brewer, would go out and get high in the alley, and then like, he'd smoke
management perks.
Yeah. And then I'd come out and grab like the last puff, and then he'd be like, all right, go back in there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that. I had experience in there, but I got out of school, really. That was a great time in life. Let's just say I got out of school. ended up down here in Louisville. And then at the time, the only job that I could get was in a psych hospital. That was like, I needed to get a job like quick. So I started working at Our Lady of Peace. And it was terrible, to say the least. You know, I don't know if you've ever worked with people that have emotional issues and so on. But it was pretty rough. So I did that for so long, I finally got to the point where I was like, I need a fucking break. I need to do something else. And I was a home brewer. And At the time, my ex-wife, I told her, hey, I got to do something. She said, go get another job or whatever. And I was like, all right. So I went down and badgered Jerry Nagy. And he gave me a job cleaning kegs. And that was my, like, entry in. It was really great. He was, I don't know if you guys know Jerry. Jerry, yeah. My business partner, he's a... He can be a polarizing guy. I mean, at times he's an amazing dude, but he can really get some people going. So he was just so weird and standoffish for like the first year. I never even talked to him. That worked. I'm serious. He would leave notes. I would just fucking go in and do like, I read his note, do the work, and that's it.
It's actually like not a terrible, maybe LAT should adopt that model.
That's how that went down. Like, and so, you know, like I said, the first year I cleaned kegs, I just showed up and he wasn't there and I would do that and tried to avoid him because he was kind of fucking weird. And then in time, he's like, hey, I need someone in the daytime. So I said, okay, I want to do this. It's cool. Come work. And he was a real prick. and so
suspicion confirmed.
He's not, you know, I just didn't get his humor. Then as you know, as time went on, we went back to the note method where he would leave a note and I would go to the other side of the building and do the work. And as time went on, we just kind of got closer, became a little bit more cordial to each other and ultimately friends. And at that point, he's like, hey, it was Cameron Finnis at the time was his assistant. Cameron was moving on to do Cumberland. He's like, I need an assistant. Do you want the job? So that was it. That was first bump. Then there was some other shit that happened that was really cool.
So the next question, I guess, or just something I'd be curious about, all homebrewers have this like moment where we're hanging out and it's like, you know, man, we should open our own brewery. With you and your business partners, did you guys have a moment like that? Was it the story that gets told, you know, through the ATG brand?
So, yeah, kind of. Yes, every brewer at some point or another, every professional brewer says, I want to have my own brewery. They don't mean it usually. There's so much that goes into it. You don't really mean that unless you do. But BBC was a really interesting place.
Bluegrass Brewing Company.
There was a lot of just a lot of fuckery that went on there. I mean, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, sure.
I think we did really good representing the beer. And I think the restaurant had gone through a lot of growing pains, but we were kind of victims of whatever was happening with them. And
or whatever wasn't.
Wasn't. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you make this amazing beer and you're carrying things and it just gets, if you're not represented well, it gets a little frustrating. So one particular day, the owner of BBC went, he went on some trip to Florida. Cool. Good. He should. He had the money to do it. Go on. we just needed stuff in the brewery. So we would ask, don't want to spend the money on that. As a business owner, I get it. I know that. Well, he comes back from Florida and he's like, hey, come out and help me get this thing out of the back of my truck. And I go out and it's a fucking like 7-foot statue of a pirate hooker.
Okay, I was on your side, but now I'm back on his side again. That sounds legit.
And it's all like, it's got cushions and shit all over it. And he's like, help me get this out. And I was like, where's this going to go? Yeah. And he's like, we're going to put it in the dining room. And I'm like, why? Not that I like, you know, it's fuck, hooker's great. Pirates, whatever.
Yeah.
But we're called Bluegrass Brewing Company. We're not Pirate Hooker Brewery. And he wanted that thing out there. So we drug that fucking thing out and had, I think it's over at the one on 3rd and Main.
It's still there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know
exactly the piece of which you speak. Well,
I was like, "What? Why did you get this?" He's like, it was a deal. It was $700. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, yeah. We needed clamps or something. And I was just like, I hate you.
It was like early 2000s, like $700 is a small fortune.
It was just
that's a 16 barrel batch back then.
It was just I'm like, I don't hate the guy. Let me say that. And he's not a bad dude, but it was that choice where I was like,
yeah,
you'll always just be in the way of my success.
Yeah.
And so Jerry, I call him and I was like, hey man.
You see this fucking statue?
Yeah, he was like, I already know. And I said, hey, you know, you got a good thing here. I get it. And if you know, just let me say this. I can't be represented like this. I'm going to start looking for something. And he was like, what makes you fucking think I want to be here through this? And that was really the beginning of like, well, let's start our own brewery. And he said, I'll never forget. He said, let's get these kids in school. And that was like a year before we started the process. But the kids were like fucking 4, you know, 2, whatever. So,
oh, your kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we both had a whole bunch of kids. That's the genesis of the start. Adam and Andrew came along the way. And Adam, you know, to his credit, he came in with his very, you know, transparent and the intent to learn and go do his own thing. You can't say enough about how driven that dude is with regards to that. But I think when the opportunity came to kind of, you know, work with us and have some experience, people who could actually do it, make the beer and so on, that helped out a lot. And then Andrew was kind of a similar situation.
And so that would have been 2010. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you just starting a business. Like you guys were just running a brick and mortar, making mm-hmm. beer, you know, wake up, make beer, mm-hmm. get ready to go to bed, sell beer, have people have good experiences in your tap room. Against the Grain has always really impressed me that you guys turned a small tap room based business into a brand that is nationally and internationally recognized and renowned. And that I really like personally, just as a Louisvillian, it's like a good thing to brag on. This might be too nebulous of a question, but when did you start to think about how to turn what you guys were doing in the tap room on a day-to-day basis into a brand, if that makes sense?
Well, that's a very, thank you. Those are very kind words. That misrepresents what really happened.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah. It's mostly like scramble. Yeah.
Let me.
It's a complete shit show. Yeah.
First, we need a giant statue of a pirate.
First of all, we were very fortunate. The stars and the planets aligned, and a new Chariot wanted to kind of relinquish his responsibility of Brownings. So, you know, we happened to be at the right place at the right time
That's an old brewery that's since closed down in Louisville.
That's right. Yeah. So
you're also campaigning on the advent of beer in Louisville being a craft.
Yeah, I mean, we were the beginning of a new wave.
The first brewer-owned brewery, right?
That's right. I think the idea behind brewer-owned was that we were producing beers that brewers wanted, and that really went a long way with people. So, you know, again, we were fortunate to land that location, which lent itself to our being in the public eye much, much more than these other places that are new. So we had a lot of opportunity there. And you really have to like try to fuck that up. I mean, you think of really 10,000 or 10,000 people in that stadium at one time when it's full. On average, at those games, it's probably 2,000, yeah. I'd say.
But, so against the grain, where your original spot was, it is in the same area. It's the same building as Louisville Slugger Field, our minor league baseball team. For a while there, the soccer team as well, before they got their own stadium.
And that certainly helped as well. So, you know, we certainly were successful with regards to that. Again, that wave of brewing business in Louisville was helpful. But actually, that wasn't that great at that time. That's why we started distributing out in different areas of the country. We really couldn't get a good foothold on distribution in Kentucky because Kentuckians weren't really drinking beer like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just wasn't the right time. So we went out, you know, I think our first market outside of Kentucky was Chicago, and it took and really picked up in places that are serious, you know, the Map Room and the Local Option and places like that. So that gave us that like national stage right out of the gates. And then it was, when you see an opportunity to brew with an international brewer, you brew with them, you know, you make waves, you promote yourself. I can't say enough about the value that, Lori Beck and Tyler Trotter for the Louisville beer community.
Yep, from Holy Grail and Louisville Beer Store.
Yeah.
Yep.
They truly laid the groundwork for an understanding of quality and worldliness that beer could have, and also for Louisville Brewery. So, you know, tip our hat to them. They're good ones.
Yep. Oh, yeah. 100% agree. The trope of Louisville beer is kind of, or Kentucky as a whole is kind of, we're 5 years behind the trend. Yeah. So you're saying you open and now you're like looking at like distributing outwards because there's no real foothold. Yeah. And then five years in, that's when you probably established your biggest foothold, you know, early 2015,
16. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what our biggest year was probably 2018.
Okay.
I would say, you know, the pandemic long dicked us like it did damn near everyone else.
Yep.
But the build up to that was really, you know, interesting. Again, I mean, I look back, there are things that I would change. I mean, we didn't do everything right. I probably would have focused a lot more, knowing what I know now, focused a lot more on the local market. But the local market really wasn't focused on us, too. Yeah, so it's kind of hard to say that. So we had really a really interesting distribution model where we were distributing to an importer who was distributing to distributors. And then that would put us everywhere in the fucking world. So we're like, we're distributing a mile wide, an inch deep, versus a lot of other breweries. They're like, I want to be a mile deep in like my or foot, you know, around me. So,
yeah. I think in the like 2016 to probably 2019 era, like the hyperlocal really became a focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the heels of the pandemic, everything was flourishing and everyone took a little bit of introspective look. And yeah, that did drive preference and uncertainty. And everyone felt that.
Where are you reading this shit?
Out of my head.
From the like from the score of human nature. Like that's like fucking Wagner, man. Like that's what happened during COVID. Yeah, we all got reset.
Everything was like blowing up in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then, you know,
then fucking reality punched us all in the face. Yeah. Like you can't just like do crazy shit all the time.
We were so heavy on premise. That was the, you know, I would say we were 60% on premise sales out in distribution. Well, I got turned off overnight and it really still isn't back to where it was.
No,
just not a thing. And I honestly don't think it will be back for years. We have different people drinking now.
And yeah. Kids, mm-hmm. Like kids, man. I got a kids segment for the end of our podcast.
It's not on the front of
show. We'll talk about these kids.
So I don't want to disrupt.
That sounded weird.
Cut that.
Muller, go ahead with this.
Drag us forward. We talked about a little bit about doing some international stuff, though. I mean, you also opened a tap room in Japan.
That's right.
What was that conversation
like? Why did we do that?
Why did that happen? Yeah.
I don't know why we did that. You know, I do know. Because of the international work that we had done, and we still have really good relationship with the World Trade Center here in Kentucky. You know, we would help represent Kentucky in different foreign markets if there was a conference or anything. It's really, they utilized us as a selling point for other businesses to come spend their money here. they hooked us up with a guy in Japan who had been over for whatever reason to do really like a kind of fact finding mission to if he could put a brew pub on his property. So really it was just to kind of consult. And it ultimately turned into, well, I would rather just have your brew pub here. And so we went down the road of a licensing agreement, and we helped build the thing there. So Jerry went out and fucked around with it and helped them with their recipes. We still send them beer from time to time. So that's kind of how that came to be. Now they're,
that is pretty fucking cool to have like a satellite there, yeah, location in Japan.
In
like
Ishigaki.
on the cool part of the beach. Like it's in that cool section from all of my research.
It's we don't own it necessarily. We reap royalties. You could call it a franchise, maybe. I guess they would, like McDonald's type.
So you're in the real estate.
Yeah.
so that still exists.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's doing smashingly. Do you wanna go? Won awards. Not particularly. I like the beach. I mean, I do that, but the food, not my thing.
It's no calamari salads for you.
No. I've had some gross shit. I think that's right up there.
Well, now we're going to introduce a new segment to the show called Cruise Reviews. David, take it away.
All right. I love saying what I think.
I'm intimidated. I'm intimidated for you already.
So this segment inspired out of your love for opinions. You always have them.
I always will.
So, so I'm going to give you just a few brief moments to respond to a few.
How are we doing this? One word, two word answers?
You got 5 seconds.
Okay.
5 seconds.
I'm going to hit the buzzer. If you don't get it, there's a bonus round. I'm going to give you 15.
I'll take it.
Okay. But yeah, I need you to respond to these things. San Cruz Reviews. Ready?
Yeah. Lay it on me.
All right. Hey, beer.
Excellent.
Hazy IPA.
Bullshit. Actually, it's okay.
Fun dip.
That's the lick stick stuff?
Yeah.
That stuff was good. I would never let my kids have it, though.
Was good?
Was.
Not anymore?
Nah, I'm grown. That's it makes more messes
than 5
now.
Seconds.
Okay. Never licked a stick. Okay. Best deodorant for a brewer?
Oh, God, I don't know. A fucking bath. Just take a shower after work.
Cold IPA.
You know, I like it.
Bullshit.
I like it. It's not bullshit. It's bullshit. It's really, no, it's IPA.
Diverse hiring.
I love it. I've crossed the board.
Fox News.
Hate it. Fuck that shit. I just sent a text to that guy, Eric Allen, about that. Keep watching cartoons is what I told him.
Were you on it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Those things are not mutually exclusive.
No. This is my personal favorite. Ass beers.
Love ass beers. I think we've planted a flag in asses. What do you think?
I love them. This is a very personal reference to cold ass beer and sit your ass down. Mm-hmm. Very good. A nice little amber.
Fat ass tires coming out soon too.
I love it. That's
great. Just waiting on the approval.
Wonderful. Also, sit your juicy ass down is a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, boating on a river.
It's okay. It there's ups and downs. I prefer a lake.
The state of Indiana.
Love it. It's fucking heaven.
Jerry Nagy.
One of my favorite people ever. Real fucking weird though.
Uranium.
Like, is that a game? Like the element?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Useful.
Oh, well, thank you, Sam. That was all we needed to know.
Rihanna's Super Bowl halftime performance.
I did not like it. It was boring.
Liz Hovey.
She's doing a good job.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
The World Cup.
Do we have to pretend to enjoy it? Do we have to? Yeah. I mean, I feel like we do. Every 4 years, we all pretend to enjoy that.
Ham's beer.
Oh, it's okay. I had a lot in college. A lot.
Potholes in Louisville roads.
They're not bad. There's other places that are way fucking worse. Michigan, way worse.
Oh, God.
Listen, Mr. Southern Indiana, we got some pothole problems in Germantown.
Drive around them.
T-Mart.
He's all right. He offered to make me another pot of coffee today.
Starbucks.
No. Yeah, you know what? It's okay. If in a pinch, it's good stuff.
I think he's talking about the Herman Melville character.
No.
No, anyway.
And now we enter the bonus round.
Let's go.
Oh. Where you now have 15 seconds to respond.
This is good.
Long form.
Family road trips. Mm.
Who's family?
Do you have more time?
Oh, yeah. I have more time?
Yeah, you have 15 seconds.
Family, they're great. I'm going to take my kids on a road trip for the first time in 4 years. They fucked up the last 4 years, so I told them no. But we're going to do it again this year.
So you better appreciate it.
Rascals. They were just bitches. They were bitches the previous 4 years at the beach. So we never took them back.
Part two of the bonus round. 15 seconds to respond. John King.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, there's so many things. That's a long talk about John King. Well, he's got problems. I think he's hiding a lot from himself and leaving a lot in the open for the rest of us.
Yeah.
But all in all, John's a good guy. Agreed. Except for when he fucking tries to bully Etsy people.
He's always trying to bully people on Etsy. Yeah, I don't understand it.
Sometimes I'll go on and I'll find somebody and be like, I'm going to text this to him to see what he does. Come on. The guy didn't fucking invent barrel art or crafts.
He does good
woodworking. He's really good.
He knows his way around wood.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
People named Jesse.
Solid.
Well, we've got former Jesse. Girl Jesse, who's still around, kind of. And then there was good Jesse. Good Jesse worked at the brewery. She was beautiful. Really, just beautiful, really. That's all. That's all. She was good. Those are the good ones.
All the other Jessies who've now been slighted.
Oh, no. Yeah, they know.
They knew.
Yeah, we got a lot of those. I'm ready for the next.
That was a lot of opinions. That was awesome. That was one of our best segments we've ever done.
And that concludes the cruise reviews segment.
I just want to keep going, honestly.
We're about
modern
to hear
monetary theory.
We're about to
Federal
hear more
reserve. Okay, go ahead.
We're about to hear more opinions from Sam because as a guest of the show, we always ask our guests to bring a couple different items as part of a show and tell segment. So part one of show and tell segment. Sam, you brought us something that you like and enjoy beer-wise.
Yeah, of course.
Let's crack it open.
Is today, do I announce it or do you announce it?
I don't even see what it is. So we got to get it out of the fridge first. Oh. So why don't you just go ahead and say what you brought and why you brought it?
But you said to do something different. That we can do that.
This is part two.
Oh, that's part two. Okay. That's part one. Surprise.
Yeah. Something you love that's beer. And without any hesitation, this is Sit Your Ass Down.
Yep.
Yeah. Against the Grain.
And you want to know a little about it?
Please tell me more.
So Sit Your Ass Down was invented by the great and never late Jerry Nagy in 2013. Why was it called Sit Your Ass Down?
Why was it called Sit Your Ass Down?
Because we couldn't fucking think of a better name. I still don't like this name. We there was a whole lot of them. There was citruses and asterisks, I think was one of them. Just a lot of dumb shit.
We should also place this beer in the historical context. When you guys were releasing it, it was you guys were among the first of the double imperial IPAs. Zombie Dust was big.
Yeah.
All the stuff from Russian River was flooding into the market or the quote-unquote market or whatever. But Against the Grain, Sit Your Ass Down was one of the first beers, at least on my radar, my very limited radar. I was like, oh, shit, this is one of the best beers in the country that is made right here in Louisville.
We got a hold of some Citra hops because I think we were contract brewing something for McKellar. And that's how we got them, I believe.
Because that was a hot commodity back then.
Yeah, that's part of how this beer came to be. We what little bit we had left over was it was amazing. We were we want to make this beer with this, but we couldn't. We made his shit and got it out of there, and then we wanted to do one. We couldn't get the hops. So Jerry actually, he created that Citra profile. He zested a zillion lemons and limes and grapefruits and shit like that. I mean, it was a lot. It was a lot of work. Made the beer, and it really, it was pretty regular. It was Columbus hops and all that zest. And a lot of people were just amazed and astounded by it. So it was a big seller. That was the one that took off. So we were like, oh, we'll make it again. And we got a hold of some Citra hops, and it was way better that second time with the real hops. So that
this is a time where hop contracts were just starting to be negotiated.
Yeah, too. You're right.
Yeah, we were so small, we just didn't have that opportunity to leverage that. So, you know, we got it when we could. I think one time we bought them from a homebrew place online, and you know those little packs. Like we opened up
1,000 of them. Yeah.
If we open up 10 more, we'll have enough for the dry hop.
You think that company loves you, but God, that ruins people's lives. Yes,
I always appreciated the description on the cans for this beer. Uh-huh. This beer is not candy or mother's milk. It is not brewed by gypsies or aliens, nor does it contain any zombie dirt. This is a double IPA brewed with Citra hops. It is sticky, hoppy, and delicious. Simply drink it and enjoy it. Don't hoard this beer. Sit your ass down and drink it now. I just love the first two sentences about not candy or mother's milk. It's not brewed by gypsies or aliens, mm-hmm. not zombie dust or dirt, whatever.
The gypsies it's a reference to the gypsy brewer because, you know, for a long time, people had no respect for that. The alien is a reference to my friend Brian Strumke because he looks like an alien.
From Stillwater.
Yep. He's very thin and... You know, it's thin.
Malnourished?
Yeah, no hair. So that's that. And then obviously the zombie dirt's a poke at our good friends up at the Floyds, the Four Floyds. Mm-hmm. You don't want to say too much because they'll cease and desist your ass for anything.
They're not open anymore.
The Four Floyds?
You can't go there.
They're going to open it again.
That's what they say.
What?
I bet they do.
I hope they do.
Who knows?
It's also a wonderful stop going on the way up to Chicago. Like,
yeah,
pop off in Munster.
Get their shit at Kroger.
I feel like ATG is a good stop off on the way up to Munster? Unnamed brewery in southern Indiana.
So much glassware on the table right now. Yeah. You've had the beer out for quite a long time now.
I fucking love Citra.
It's iconic now.
But
what do you say?
But you just recently created a variant of it.
Yeah. You know, at this age, place in my beer life, I look at data. I look at trends on a national level. And, you know, we make decisions based on what's smart for the brewery and what makes sense for the business. And one of them was to give some credence to what that fucking monster behemoth Voodoo Ranger New Belgium doing, you know, and explore what opportunities you have with an existing brand that's successful.
So someone from New Belgium might be on the podcast next week. So
I'll tell you everything that's not wrong. Yeah.
She's the best.
She's the best. Yeah, no.
She's
the best.
She's a good one. No, I just, they're the magic sauce. I think at this point is alcohol. You know, let's get real. People like to get drunk still. Some don't, but people do. And then IPA. That's it, you know.
To quote another local brewer, and I won't give his name, people like to get fucked upper.
That's a great quote.
And that's exactly what he says every time. And if you
fucked
don't make
upper,
yeah. And if you don't make beer that gets people fucked upper, then they ain't paying for it. You know.
Is it Dylan? It feels like that's
not a Dylan thing.
Like I disagreed to some point, not all the way, but. It's a delicate balance between drinking something like a light lager pilsner or like the other end of the flavor profile, which is like a double IPA. Like those are the two ends of the spectrum to some extent. And you have to either enjoy light lagers, which can get fucked up very easily, or you have to enjoy the other end of the spectrum, which is like double IPA, which is also easy to get wrong. But I've always found Citra Down to be a good representative of that upper end of the spectrum.
I can't read the code on it.
Oh, well, is there, you want to give up? We never give away the secrets of reading the code.
It clearly, when it went down and got coded, it was jiggling. So it looks like shit. I guess that's a good thing.
Fresh and good and boozy and hoppy and citra-y. And yeah, this is one of my favorite beers that's ever come out of Louisville. I think it's one of the most important Louisville beers that's ever been made. And I love it.
This is a big bodied beer. I don't know. That's not so much of the thing anymore.
No, it's not. It's not in style. It's not in vogue. but I still love it.
So you have the original downtown location, and then a few years back, you also got into the Old Cumberland Brews mm-hmm. location. Talk a little bit about that and what prompted that location.
Well, no forethought, as per usual. at the time, Mark Allgaier, who owned Cumberland, he wanted to get out of that. I think it had kind of run its course for him. And the opportunity arose for us. And it really, that is a very sentimental place for me.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jerry and I had been over there drunk many, many, many times in our youth. You know,
it was an institution in Louisville.
Yeah. So the thought of it not being that was harsh. It was rough. And the price was right. You know, it just was an easy purchase to do. So we bought that business. The assets, I would say, not the business. He retained the Cumberland name. But, yeah, it was more about the assets and the lease. It just made sense.
But so. You continued a legacy as a pub house in Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being your other location downtown, mm-hmm. it's, you know, primarily tourism mm-hmm. focused. So this brings like a homey Bartown Road vibe to the whole brand.
Yeah.
You know, and
dive bar.
Yeah, and there's stuff there that, like, you know, you all brew on the small system at Smokehouse that you just, you know, if you're not going downtown, do that, which everyone should go downtown because it's great. Mm-hmm. Definitely not on fire. yeah, but if you're in the local neighborhood, I mean, Public House is a great place to stop. I mean, I think the, you know, it predates me a little bit, but like the powerhouse was Cumberland and RCD. Just running that
River,
you know,
City Draft House.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Just running yeah. that Bartown Road vibe for a while.
Yeah, yeah. They had a great bunch of people. That's another big piece of that. You had to have the right people in place. So they had some good ones, and that's Lori Beck. Mm-hmm. She started there. You know, Ricky,
yeah,
Brown. He was there. His sister Leslie. Just a whole lot of Lucy. People that really, yeah, Lucy, not Leslie, but Leslie. What's her face was there. Anyhow, there was a whole slew of people that were really important, I think, to the industry at that time. And, you know, I like I said, I can't imagine it not being that. That's a weird thought. And, you know, we wanted to carry on with that and have that element of our business exist as well.
I think you all did a good job with it, too. I mean, it feels still pretty homey and divey, but against the grain brand. I love the photo
yeah.
walls.
Yeah, yeah.
Or actually, multiple walls. I mean, so many photos. I was told when Public House first opened that I was up on the wall somewhere. I think they were just lying to
me. No, you're there.
Okay, well, I've never seen it, so I still haven't seen it.
You're in the manager's room.
Yikes.
It's just you.
Yeah.
Just you.
Just you.
Yeah, that's all of the memories that I threw some in there. I mean, everybody that worked for the company could send pictures in, and we just tried to fit every one that we possibly could on the wall.
You mentioned somebody that you're somebody that likes to review trends and make business decisions based on that. What are you seeing right now as far as alcohol sales across the board and beer sales specifically, I guess?
Beer's in the fucking shitter right now, honestly. I mean, craft is up about 3%, I want to say, nationwide, but I don't think that's indicative entirely of beer, as we would call it. You know, you got a lot of stuff that call it beer because it was produced, you know, in the vein of it being a malt beverage, but it's not stylistically hitting anywhere, so... I don't know. I mean, that's not a great place to be because it's not so sustainable. The good news is I do think there are people drifting back in that regard. It sounds crazy, but like the beacon or the light on the hill for me is the alcohol. The high alcohol is what won the pandemic. It's what won everything. And I think that will be the driver for craft in the future. And then we'll start to see things go back to a more controlled setting. But when you start introducing all these new concepts, like seltzer was called beer, you know, mm-hmm. FMB was called beer. These are not beer. These are FMB is what they are. You know, those things really muddy the water and they shake out like the little guys, you know, who can survive that if that's the way it's going to be. A lot of people in the beer industry also bitch about NA. I don't really have a problem with it. I think NA is going to kind of come and go the way it has in the past. I think there's some elements of it that are here to stay, but I think I read it was like 9 out of 10 NA beer drinkers still drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a place.
Your Tuesday or yeah. your Wednesday or like whatever.
Yeah, it's that. I think that's one that's fine with me. I don't like the bastardization of the category though. I think it's detrimental to us.
You ever watch Star Trek?
I have.
Mm-hmm. So in Star Trek, they have synthahol, which is like in the future, no one has to have alcohol anymore. They can get like this thing that's made by a computer and you can drink it in a cocktail and it gives you like a very brief, like 15 minute effect as if you had just drank a very nice double IPA produced by Against the Grain to Dress Down or a very nice like old fashioned. You're just watching Mad Men or whatever. Is there anything that I don't know? I ask myself, is there a difference between synthetic fake experience in what we like? Well, we all four here sitting at this table like about alcohol and something that could be simulated by it.
If you can't appreciate tradition and you can't attach some romance to something, how will you love it forever? How can that be the case? Mm-hmm. And, you know, sadly, if those things are forced out of the way for whatever reason, then, you know, you run the risk of losing some things forever. You know, I hate to see that. Again, I'll go back to it. The commercialization of the beer industry and the craft side of it. We'll say the like small brewery.
We often on this podcast quote one Sam Cruise say, craft beer is dead.
It is. It is going to die even more if people don't draw some lines and say I'm not doing that.
So what does that line look like, and who is dictating where the line is?
That's a good question. Well, the consumer is going to dictate that.
Yeah,
that's all day long. That's who tells us what's going on.
Our last guest brought Zima on.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Made in Japan.
I appreciate that stuff. You know, it just isn't beer. It's flavored malt beverage, and we can't let it. That was a big argument that a lot. I'm fucking guilty of it. Like people made an argument like, why can't you call it beer? Why can't that? You know, why do we call them craft? Sam Adams is craft. No, the fuck, they're not craft. They make Twisted Tea.
They describe the rules as well. It seems to me like the definition of craft beer is one barrel less than whatever Boston Beer Company produces every year.
Consumers are they make the decisions, but there are ways that the consumer is, driven. You know, and when you've got a segment or when you've got an industry that is basically opened the door for somebody to come in and take your money, really,
yeah,
that happens, and it happens at the grocery level. Like it's a really good place to see. You know, some beers can sell really well, but if you've got a portfolio driver, they can come in and say, "Hey, you know, yeah, that sells well. I really appreciate that, but we do your resets. You're going to take that out. We've got a product that'll fit right there for you.
And you're either going to buy the nice portfolio display.
I mean, it's a portfolio thing. You get the portfolio or you get nothing. And you know, we know how that goes. It's an age old story.
So you think it's far more competitive now than in recent years?
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not craft beer. Like, I don't know it. I don't think, compete on a distribution level. We don't compete with here locally. I don't feel like we have a competitive issue with our local breweries.
No. I was more going to lean into like, what's greasing the wheel? You know, how do you push beyond what, you know, how do you oversell of what?
What do you mean? Like what? Oversell what?
Well, when you're like, something else would take our spot, you know, be it non-local, be it national, whatever. How do you reinforce the fact that this is local and we made it here and people care about this?
How do you win?
Yeah.
How do you win yeah. that? I just don't know if you can, unfortunately. And what happens is you build to a certain size and you scale, and then the market starts to kind of shake. And you still are built at a certain place. You have to have that throughput. mm-hmm. you know.
It seems to me, and this is, I guess, another veiled compliment, but Against the Grain has never necessarily been about just appealing to everyone. It's about finding, you guys have been very good at finding the people who resonate with what you guys are doing rather than just doing mass appeal, which is, it's a different kind of business model. It's a different 80-20.
It's the name.
Yeah,
it's,
well, yeah. You're right. Okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
I think there's a lot. There's a lot more that goes into that. Again, as always, there's more to the story. We've learned over time that you can't win. Like light lager, like we can produce a light lager. It would be fantastic too. It would be so competitive, quality and flavor wise, with any other light lager you could get in market. However, why would we fight when we don't have the marketing dollars? We don't have the book to say, you're actually going to put in our three new SKUs because our one product amounts to 25% of your alcohol sales. Like that is a thing that happens. So we just can't win that. We have to find our place within that. And that has a lot to do with who our people are. I mean, you know your audience at that point. It's not fucking domestic drinkers, mm-hmm. you know?
Do you have any opinions on the recent news of Braxton in the Cincinnati area, Covington, Kentucky, introducing a new brand for garage beer and wanting to take that to the next level?
You know, I do. Jake told me he kind of explained what was going on with that. I'm really excited and happy for him. He was able to I have to say this, for any brewery that has ever sold, like, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
That you did something like that. It is a business, you know. As far as what he did, I think they were positioned that they needed to do that, in my opinion. And garage beer maybe is, again, it's one of those products that it was really doing great, but you've got a place and then you've got a wall you've got to get through. And like, how are you going to compete with Bud?
Coors Banquet.
How are you going to do that? You don't actually. What you do is you sell that, make some money, and you go back into those other things you know really, really well. Tap rooms, super crafty stuff. Now, you know, good on him. He actually was the one that cracked the nut in that regard.
For the record, I love garage beer.
It's fantastic.
It's great.
Well, it's just to hear really you explain it as a wall instead of a plateau. I mm-hmm. guess it's kind of a different mindset of how you would frame that. Because normally you're like, this is all my placements, this is as far as I can get, this is as wide as I can get. You're like, no, it's a wall. Like it's the glass ceiling, I guess, for lack of a better term.
There are styles and there are, you know, now, this is a now thing. 10, 15 years ago, different story. You know, it was, who knew what would happen? But we are now, I know where what happened. We're there, and that's a wall. You can't get through it.
Now we have our other segment that we do occasionally. Reddit questions. This is for everybody at the table. Sam, John, David, please share your opinion appropriately as you see fit. First one is coming from user BMalt. M-A-U-L-T, BMalt. Are prairie beers worth it? I'm curious as I have seen bottles here in Eastern Pennsylvania, but not sure I can justify the high price point.
No,
is there
one
specific one I should try?
No, go get the fuck out of here, Malt.
But get Christmas Bomb one time. If you're just getting into craft beer, get Prairie Christmas Bomb.
And drink it next to something there that's made there.
Yeah.
And then tell me what you think.
Yeah. What is it worth it?
Buy the shirt. They have really cool branding.
They have buy something local.
They have great branding.
No, oh, yeah. It's not worth it.
I don't know. I mean, if you go to the store, is it at the store or do you have to ship it?
Doesn't
you know, it's your fucking money. Whatever. Also,
I will say just on the DL, Prairie has kind of a bad rep for some of their shit being kind of infected and spoiled right now. So,
David, do you have opinions about this?
Where did they say they were getting this?
Eastern Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
At Whole Foods.
You trade with him?
That's a long way from Oklahoma. It's going to
fuck your trade thing up.
No, I'm just saying it's a long way from Oklahoma. As someone that, relatively new, grew up in the scene of like Prairie being like a pioneer in the barrel aged space. Well,
get the fuck out of here.
I agree. I argue with these guys every week.
Not only is it dumb, it's not true.
Let's rephrase. Pioneer in the
nothing. The nothing category.
In the hype barrel aged.
Adjunct hype space barrel aged beer?
No.
Okay, I've got nothing against Prairie. I just think that they don't have a great track record.
They're great. It's Krebs Brewing. They're great guys.
Let's consider the fact that they offered a private barrel membership where you could purchase a barrel of beer, have it dosed the way you want it, and then go to Oklahoma to pick it up. Where else in the country was that program existing before they did it?
I don't know.
Okay, but to my point, they were looking ahead of.
Wasn't there a Burning Foot or something that would do that?
Yes, let's talk about that then.
Anyways, I think they were looking.
Did you trade for their beer?
No, I think they were looking ahead. I think that the quality has obviously diminished over time due to multiple other options that have been available.
No, it has not.
I think it's worse now. I think it's much worse now.
It's you're different.
I might be different.
I was going to say that I have an opportunity. Saturday
might be much different.
For you all to donate to the Ross Perot political campaign that I'm running in 1996. It's big. It's going to change everything.
All right. Next question. This is coming from Grisiaco. I don't know.
I like it.
What beer pairs best with steak, specifically ribeye?
Ooh.
I almost always have wine with steak, and I'd like to branch out. Sam.
Bud Light, Coors Light. A beer. I would try a beer actually. If you can find Against the Grain's a beer, I think that'd be a fantastic pairing.
A beer and a steak. Okay.
I'm going to go with like some kind of a hoppy. So there's two ways you can go with like a ribeye.
Red wine. This would have been.
Honestly, that would be fantastic. Be great
with the Schneider Weiss.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also depends on like what kind of a night you're trying to have, but nice hoppy European lager or a nice floral high ABV American IPA would be my go-tos for a nice steak,
David.
So for my 27th birthday,
oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Were you in Oklahoma?
I was not
visiting your favorite brewery.
No. I did, during the pandemic, there was this thing where Kroger was just selling like dry age or rib roast. So I would dry age them at my house. For my birthday, I did make a reverse seared dry age ribeye, and I had a very nice Dre Fontenon aged in red wine barrels. And it was immaculate. By myself, my own experience.
You did it by yourself?
Yeah, hell yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I
it was great.
I would probably just say like a classic West Coast IPA.
With a steak, really?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think keep it, steak is awesome. Like,
yeah.
Keep it simple. There's no such thing as a good beer with a steak. What you want is like the beer that you drink while you're just watching the steak grill. That's the only reason to grill.
That's true.
You know?
But I will say, like bottle of wine, like you open wine and you have a glass of wine with your steak means I had a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Old Vine Zinfandel with like a nice ribeye. Hell yeah.
It's not just a glass, it's bottle.
Ceremonious.
This is probably more apropos for Sam to answer, but coming from Hammerfest Nord.
I like that place. That's cool.
Our company is using 19.2 ounce cans as an imperial pint gimmick or some other reason. For example, can supply.
No. Whoa. No, they're using it. This shit goes in a gas station. That's what it's for. You can get the highest fucking price possible for the liquid in there with that. That's all it is. It C-stores are driving that whole sale. So and actually, if you can get higher alcohol in there, you can even win more in craft. If you want to see how that they like the timeless example. I think they call it, was it like St. Ides or Steel Bull or some shit like that? The malt liquors in
big cans.
That's it.
Or presently and current in present day, New Belgium's Juice Force.
9%.
9% comes in 19.2 ounce cans. It's huge.
Fucking winning is what it is.
I remember them in Oscar Blues stovepipe BA 1050s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was like, this one can't, this is all you need. This is it. This is the absolute maximum you could drink at this period.
Have you all bought one recently? Just any 19.2 ounce?
Yeah. If I go to the liquor store for any reason, I'm getting one.
Yeah. The Sierra Nevada Pale Ales in 22 ounce cans.
Steel Reserve.
Mm-hmm. On that.
Steel Reserve. Yeah.
Steel Reserve. That's what it is.
Yeah. I haven't bought one, I don't think, ever. Maybe a Sierra Nevada.
Like when I was young, I'd drive around fucking.
I will do a callback to when Drew Johnson was on the podcast to shout out Old English Malt Liquor. Just as a small shout out. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, let's go ahead. As we wrap things up, let's move into our part two of show and tell. Something non-beer related that you love.
Well, this isn't beer. It's sake. I guess you could say it's not beer related because it's made from rice. It's still fermented, kind of in a weird way. This is our now defunct sake company.
Oh,
defunct.
Is this breaking news? I'm not sure if this has been talked about publicly.
We made so much that we were good for a while, but we've decided to discontinue that program for now. Mm. So
for those listening, you all got into the sake space.
Yeah.
What, in 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about this sake and River City Sake Company.
So River City Sake Company is a project. It was a project that we started really out of a desire to do something different. We just wanted to get in. Yeah, it's got the lees in there. Okay. We wanted to do something a little different. And, we all had some excitement about that. So we had somebody on the team at the time who could, he was really into it and who could execute it. He got ill, and a part of his recovery, it was a physical illness. His recovery, he just can't drink alcohol anymore. I mean, it's bad for his body. So he was our guy. You know, he's not doing that anymore, and I'm good on him for what he's got going on in life, and I'm here for that. But that was kind of a part of it as well. It's just time to land that plane for now.
Were you drinking much sake before you decided to go into that world?
Fuck yeah.
Sake is a crazy little thing.
I love it. There's something to be said about like a glass of sake and really,
nice steak ribeye.
Yeah. I'm kind of bad with this stuff because I'll buy a bottle of that and it's not going in a tiny glass like these fools are doing. That's fuckers. I'm pouring a full glass of that. I think it's great. A lot of dishes that I would make at home would be good for that. So this is unique. This is a Junmai. Junmai is, would be like the clear drinking sake. It's different from a lot of the sakes you would get in America, because it's not as clean. It's very estery, and that's the type of yeast that we chose to use, which was much more prevalent in like small Japanese breweries or sake, whatever they call them, sake breweries, sakeries. I don't know.
It's so good. It's so it has like a creaminess to it.
Mm-hmm.
You taste the grain a lot in it.
I hate that we have to stop, but it's time to give it a rest for a while.
Only I had the other one that was called the Kochi.
Mm-hmm.
How you pronounce that?
Yeah, Kochi. Yeah. They mean something. What is it? Toshin is, they're like neighborhoods.
Okay.
So I think Toshin is Highlands.
Oh, that fits.
And then Kochi is downtown.
Yep. Downtown is easy drinking but bold in flavor.
Okay, then that's downtown.
Enjoy it with your favorite sushi. Take it down after raging at a punk rock show or sip it as a nightcap. Junmai. 16%.
Mm-hmm.
Always kind of sneaks up on you. If you're not familiar with sake, it's always really weird to take a sip of it because you don't, it's different. Like it is just different than anything else you know. Like it has a weird mouthfeel, has a weird finish. I remember the first time I think I ever had sake was actually at
you say craft bash?
Craft bash. Yeah. Yeah, it was like 90 degrees, and I was just drinking a bunch of like
from Void,
Void Stout or whatever, whatever they had that year. Then I went to the Void Sake from Lexington, and I was like, oh, this is maybe good, but maybe not right now.
I like that they're doing the seltzer.
Yeah.
Oh, those are great.
That's really cool. That's good idea.
Yeah. Michael and I skipped over to Lexington, maybe a month or two ago. And that was the first stop on our trip was like, hey, we got to go out to the sake company. Void has always been cool. Mm-hmm. Justin, Brandon, fucking Joe doing all the shit over there. And they're scale is so unique and small. Mm-hmm. But they have so many like flavors that they've integrated into what they do. And we actually brought back some of the sake seltzer and had it on the podcast. But it's incredible the way they can dilute it. And like you go back into the F&B space, but that's like an actual, that's incredibly crafted that they, diluted it backwards.
But they don't call it beer.
No, they can
dilute the product, but keep the story whole. Like you can continue to sell what you're selling while,
I think they're still operating in that craft space with that regard. Honestly, I mean, breweries that try to put out a seltzer, albeit I have yet to have a great craft brewery make a seltzer. They don't have the fucking equipment, but it's some of, I get it. I get why. It's a good offering. Is it beer? No.
No,
no,
and that's why I'm more on the hand of people that want to do an NA option because it does give the option. Mm-hmm. A seltzer is kind of like not a cop out, but just something that's available, and like you didn't really want it, but it might sound appealing at the time if it has like all these things in it. But the fact that people are just ignoring an NA option as something that they should have in their brewery is kind of a line that people should draw and to pay attention to.
Especially when you have somebody like Athletic that you can just, maybe the margins aren't great, but you can make something off of them instead of just buy them in bulk and have them just available in your tap room. Treat it like beef jerky.
If they don't want to.
Yeah, fuck
it. If they don't want to, just don't go there.
Yeah, but what if five of your friends are like, hey, we're going out drinking tonight, and you're like, yeah, no, like, want to do Monday.
What if five of your friends are like, I want to go have a steak, and you're like, yeah, I really wanted sushi.
What if five of your friends are like, hey, I just learned about this new church. It's called the Church of Scientology. L. Ron Hubbard, you guys ever heard of that?
So come hang out. Let's hang out. Example that you just said with the steak and sushi thing, that's fine. But then all of a sudden that restaurant's no longer known for being a, like, it's never really talked about itself as being a third place for somebody to go between work. All of a sudden it's just a restaurant that just cares about the product. So like I look at brewery tap rooms as a place to hang out.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of new.
Okay. So you're saying though that if I go there, I am expected to have alcohol.
No, you're not expected to have alcohol. You're just going there.
Okay.
But you got to buy what they have or don't.
And they have the option to buy some Athletic.
They do, unless they don't want to.
Okay. But then I'm not going out. I'm not going there then.
What is it that we said a little bit earlier? Know your customer.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not a customer.
No, I guess not. I mean, you could also just say the same thing with like kombucha, though, too. I mean, I
agree.
I just know that occasionally I go on these little stints where I don't drink, but like I want to be around the people. And sorry, I don't want to drink like Diet Coke or water. I want to drink something still somewhat flavorful. And I go to the places that have kombucha, that have NA options, because I just feel a little bit more, at home there.
I think that's great. I really do.
I feel like this warrants a little bit more of a conversation. Or what are the people who are younger than millennials? Like Gen Z.
Gen Z.
I think they don't like alcohol.
No, they love alcohol. They love Borgs. No.
I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm pretty sure everything I know about TikTok, about
Borgs. Get fucked up or whatever, Borgs. Beyond all rage or something.
Blackout rage gallon.
Blackout, yeah. I read about that. God.
We almost made you one for tonight.
Yeah, sorry. But no, it's John, I know your point. I mean, I don't think they're drinking.
I think they're not drinking alcohol. I think they're going full Star Trek, where like alcohol is the thing of the past. I don't need alcohol in my life. I'm going out there to explore strange new worlds.
I don't know.
New lives, John, new civilizations.
I use my kids as meters for what's to come. I can see he's 17. I think he's still of that, like, alcohol's bad for you.
Do you think he's had a beer?
Because we all know that alcohol's not the best.
Yeah, he will not participate. My youngest is enamored by the idea of a bar. And I think it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
So
what do you mean by like curious or like against it?
I know the youngest.
Yeah.
He's very curious about it. He's like, it's really cool that that's what you do. That's what this is. What, you know, and that people come there and want to hang out for that reason. It's, he finds it fascinating. My oldest, he works in one of my places. He thinks it's dumb.
Dad made me get this job.
Oh no, he wanted to, he likes the kitchen work. He wants to work there. He just is like, alcohol, I just don't understand why people do this.
Yeah. Well, I have a long-standing theory that like alcohol and like yeast fermentation is one of the only things that we have to thank for human civilization. Less it be like the Sumerians getting their shit together and inventing writing, or the Egyptians getting their shit together and like building pyramids.
And because John said building pyramids, we are to our outro. Guys, what do we have to plug? David, you first.
I'm going to do pyramids. Go ahead.
I'm going to plug Results Physical Therapy. You're saving me from surgery. I just got to stretch this old arm out a couple more times and I'll forget about the whole roller skating incident that we talked about 2 weeks ago.
And last week too.
I'm always a little upset about it.
John, what do you got?
Have any of you or either of you ever driven a Tesla?
I have not.
Yeah, I have.
I rented a Tesla for my vacation trip down to South Carolina. First time I'd ever driven an electric car. First time I have to give you guys a report. Oh, fuck. We're screwed. Those electric cars are really good. Yeah.
That's your plug?
Oh, my God.
Plug Elon Musk.
Okay. It was like I was like coasting on a bed of air. I can't even describe how much I love that little Tesla.
How'd the deaf people like it?
I named it Red Rocket. I didn't ask them how much, you know.
Gross. Sam, what's coming up that you want people to know about, or what do you want to plug?
Oh, God. I got to plug Against the Grain. I feel like I have the tattoo, so I might as well. What's coming up? Summer. Summer is coming up, and we have a huge patio. We have non-alcoholic water. Diet Coke.
Can't wait.
You know what, Michael? I'll pitch to the guys
let's do a seltzer.
I'll see if we can't find something that would fit. I have no reservations about having something like that there. But we have patio season coming up, and it's a great time to be out drinking beer and having a good time. We have a new menu at Against the Grain downtown. It's burgers. They're big, sloppy, nasty, filling for a good price burger. So come on down and have those. Otherwise, drink fucking local beer.
Yes.
Drink that.
Yes.
Don't buy Prairie Dong.
And
whatever other shit you need to ship here.
Because beer unless is not
unless you
want to
get
good.
It and impress your friends, then you can do that. Put it on Instagram.
That's awesome. mine is, it's also, I'll do some self-serving stuff as well. Follow us on YouTube. Subscribe. Like, rate, listen, whatever, do all the things. Same with Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you got to do. If you do this, like our boss said, we could have a pizza party if we hit.
No, I did not say that.
Are you guys David still Patreon? Is that still a thing?
So it's, it's funny they asked that, Sam. Yes, you can visit us at patreon.com/kycommons. But treat it like at this point, like a tip jar. Like, you know, if you wanna tip us a couple bucks on to Patreon, you can if you like the content. But otherwise. Subscribe, rate, listen, share. Guys, thank you so much. Sam, thanks for coming on. Appreciate your time tonight. Yes.